Hi, I'm Brian Scudamore, the founder and CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK and O2E Brands. I just sat with Ennis, 24 years old. This guy's got killer energy, tons of great questions. I mean, I know I was there to share, but I learned a ton just listening to Ennis's great questions. So tune in, check it out.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of I'm Made For More podcast. It's your host Ennis here, and today's guest is a special one. It's the one and only Brian Scudamore. Brian's story is super interesting because he's literally the definition of someone who's always taken the road less traveled. Although he never completed high school, he managed to persuade the college admissions office that he had what it takes to thrive in college. Now, while he talked himself into university, he also had to find a way to pay for his education. And although his stepdad was a liver transplant surgeon and certainly had the finances to pay for Brian's education, he chose not to. He felt it wouldn't be a good return on investment and that Brian needed to learn a valuable lesson since he didn't complete high school. So Brian took matters into his own hands, and one day, while in a McDonald's drive-thru, of all places, Brian saw what he describes as a beat-up pickup truck with plywood side panels built on the box and thought, that's my ticket to pay for college. And it was. Soon after, he dropped out of college because he wanted to fully focus on his business, and it paid off tenfold. Today, 1-800-GOT-JUNK brings in over $200 million in annual revenue. Moreover, Brian is also the founder and CEO of O2E Brands, the parent company of 1-800-GOT-JUNK and two other multi-million dollar home service businesses, Wow One Day Painting and Shack Shine. In this interview, Brian and I will talk about his philosophy, WTF, which stands for willing to fail, how to hire candidates with a founder's heart, as well as whether you need a business partner or a mentor for your business. Now, without further ado, enjoy this incredible conversation with none other than Brian Scudamore.
Brian, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and it's happy to be here.
I've read your book, watched your TED Talk, and heard your story multiple times, especially with the one with Guy Raz on How I Built This, which I absolutely love. And the common theme or message I heard is to embrace your failures, right? So what does failure mean to you, and how has your relationship with failure changed from when you were first getting started to now?
Yeah, well, you know, failure is a gift. And I don't know if I've always really thought that way, but as I've grown my business and grown my life, I've realized I've made a ton of mistakes. And if I reflect back, they've all been gifts. To me, a failure is a slip up. It's a mistake. It's something that didn't go the way you would have liked or as you planned. But it's something that if you're able to reflect and understand, how do you get better from that mistake you made? To me, that's pure gold. So a quick little story. I know you mentioned you read my book. Thank you. Yeah. When I wrote that book with my co-author, Roy H. Williams, he's known as the Wizard of Ads. He does all our radio creative. And he and I wrote the book together. He kept pushing me to not think or worry about coming up with a name for the book. As a branding guy, I love names. And he said, let's write the book, we'll get her done, and the title, I promise you, will jump out of the book. I was looking at the manuscript after we finished, and sure enough, he was right. I looked and I went, wow, I made a mistake and failed, but then I grew. Another mistake, and then I grew. And so we came up with this WTF, yeah. Willing to Fail, was the title of the book. It was being willing to make big mistakes. That's how you learn. You pick yourself back up, and that's how you have wild success.
So getting into your childhood, you have a really inspiring story, like I mentioned before. You were born in San Francisco, and then you grew up with a single mom till the age of 7, when your stepdad, Charles, came into your life. And at the time, he was studying to become a liver transplant surgeon. So he moved quite a bit to further his education. So you first moved to Vancouver, Canada, and then at the age of 12, he moved you guys over to England. How did that experience shape you, and what sort of lessons did you take away from, you know, constantly moving around?
I think I moved around a lot because of my dad's studies, and while it was stressful, especially when you enter in as a kid into school mid-year, which often mm-hmm. happened, I went to 14 schools from kindergarten through to college. Ironically, I never graduated from high school or college, but did graduate from kindergarten. I learned from moving around so much that you put yourself in an uncomfortable position and that you can, that will allow you to grow. So being the new guy at school mid-year, I had to make friends. I had to fit into different groups and I had to work harder at the social side than most people did. Mm-hmm. I think that probably led me to, as an entrepreneur, being better at meeting new people and finding opportunities, selling myself, selling the dream of what I'm building. And it was, again, another gift. What was hard as a kid was something that trained me or helped empower me to be a better entrepreneur.
Definitely. And what were you like as a student? Were you serious about school?
Oh, I was seriously awful. I was a terrible student. I talk in the book about Mr. Dodds, one of my teachers who used to just get so annoyed and irritated with me. I think all my teachers did, that I couldn't focus. I was very ADD. I was the class clown. But Mr. Dodds saw something in me. I wrote him a letter and sent him the copy of the book. And he wrote back and he's like, you know what? I always believed in you. I knew you'd do something great. And it's interesting because I think we need people in our lives that believe in us even when we don't. So I was challenged as a kid thinking, you know, everybody's telling me I'm a bad kid and that I can't focus and pay attention. But here was Mr. Dodds, who was a guy that was special to me. He saw something in me that I didn't see in myself and helped give me some confidence as I grew.
Totally. And speaking of believing, if you and I were buddies back in high school, right? Say we're like 14, 15, would I bet on you being who you are today?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, on the surface, I don't think people would have looked at me. It's a great question, Ennis. I don't think people would have looked at me and said, that guy's going to be a success. I think an entrepreneur, if I had an entrepreneur buddy, and yes, if we were the same age and we're both entrepreneurs, you might have seen me a little bit differently because you would have said, hey, this guy's an idea guy. He's always coming up with crazy stunts and ideas. He does things differently. He's focused when he wants to be. Entrepreneurs can relate. I am a part of an entrepreneur group called the Entrepreneur Organization, 10,000 people, members around the world. And what I find my closest friends in EO and I have in common is most of them didn't finish college. Really? And as entrepreneurs, we like to learn. We just don't necessarily fit the mold of tradition of what the norms are.
Do you feel like you failed school or do you feel like the schooling system failed you as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I'm not one to want to place blame. I think my personality type didn't fit well in school. Okay. So yes, school, and I get it, they try and set programs that you go through first grade and second grade and third grade, and it's meant to be quite uniform and standard for everybody, but one size doesn't fit all. And so the school program didn't fit me. I had trouble sitting down and focusing on what a teacher's teaching me if I couldn't find that I had an interest in it. So as someone who dropped out of high school, talked my way into college, dropped out of college, it's not that I don't like to learn. I like to learn from others. I like to learn like this, being asked questions, talking, asking others questions, and listening. And so growth for me and learning just comes from conversations more than it does reading books. As an entrepreneur, the best education for me was dropping out of school and getting out there and learning by doing. You mentioned my father, who's a liver transplant surgeon. I wouldn't want to know that a surgeon who was operating on me learned by just doing. You want to know they've got the proper training and education. But as an entrepreneur, I don't know if school is really the best thing, the best way for people who are starting a business to learn. You know, in fact, we've almost gone on to create our own business school of such, mm-hmm. where we have a franchise organization, and our 250 plus franchise owners, most of them have come into our world of entrepreneurship without a business idea, without business training. We give them the franchise, whether they buy 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Wow One Day Painting, or Shack Shine. They're taking a home service recipe and we help support them and build a successful empire for themselves. So again, entrepreneurs can learn by doing. There's some structure as a franchise organization that creates kind of a schooling platform for them. So I love to learn, and more than anything, I love watching people grow.
So fast forward to college, you went to Concordia as a business major for a year, like you said, and then you dropped out. First of all, can you talk about how you talked your way into college, given that you didn't even graduate high school?
Mm-hmm. So I went to 4 colleges, actually, before dropping out. The first one I went to was called Langara College in Vancouver. And it was what I think in the United States you'd call a junior college. And I approached the admissions office and I said, hey, listen, I know I didn't finish high school. I'm smart enough. I missed one course. I know I can do this. And I talked to them and sort of talked them in as an entrepreneur, as a salesperson would do. I said, I know I can do this. You got to give me a chance. And after several meetings, they finally said, you know what? Maybe you're right. And they gave me an opportunity. Now, ironically, again, after 4 colleges, I dropped out. So while I talked my way in, I also talked myself out. I realized it wasn't for me. And I stuck to my guns. And I said, this is an important decision. I sat down with my father, the liver transplant surgeon, and said, Dad, I've got some great news for you. I'm leaving college. Yeah. And he was floored. He just couldn't believe the decision I was making. But I said, Dad, my business opportunity might not be here forever. School will be here forever if I choose to go back. So I made a tough decision, and the rest is history. And, you know, I met with my dad last night for dinner. It was his birthday, and we sat out in a patio, socially distanced, the whole bit. And he feels so proud of the decision that I made, even though years ago, when I had the conversation live with him, he thought it was nuts.
Do you remember the day you dropped out, and how did you feel, and what was that like?
I remember feeling a sense of stress. I think that my father was going to think I was nuts, that my friends and family would think I was nuts. But I knew I had a business, which originally started as the Rubbish Boys before 1-800 got junk. Same business, just a different name. And I was realizing I really was learning by running my business while I was in school. And the investment of focusing on picking one, focus full-time on my school or focus full-time on my business, I had to make a choice. And focusing full-time on my business clearly paid off. How did I feel at the time? I felt sad. I felt stressed. But it didn't take me long to realize that I'd made a good decision.
And how old were you at this point?
I would have been, when I dropped out of university, I would have been 23.
Okay. And do you remember your first junk call? What was that like?
Bruce Wright was actually the first customer, and I remember the name. And I just remember hauling a bunch of junk and completely underbidding the project. I think it was a $400 job that I ended up charging $120. You know, not knowing what I was getting into and how much volume his junk would actually take up in the truck. Mm-hmm. But you learn valuable lessons. Again, you've got to have a failure. You've got to make a mistake. Customer was happy. He paid way less than he probably expected it would be. But it taught me how to plan ahead and approach customers and give them an upfront price that was based on some experience versus guesswork in the beginning.
Something I've noticed about you is you're super resourceful. For example, when you first started the Rubbish Boys, just 2 weeks in, I read your truck broke down and you barely had any money to get it fixed. And then you needed to get some advertising marketing money for your business at the time. And so you got pretty creative and you called the local newspaper. What did you tell them and what was the outcome of that conversation?
I called the local press, the local paper. It was called the Vancouver Province. It was the biggest paper in the time in Vancouver. And I said, picked up the phone. I said, I got an awesome story for you. A student who started a business during a recession. I couldn't find a job. So I paved the way for my own education and created the Rubbish Boys, bought a truck, started hauling junk. And they thought it was a great story. It might've been a slow news day. But they came and they took some photos, our truck with the big phone number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or back in the day, it was actually 738-JUNK, was emblazoned on the front page of the newspaper the next day. Mm-hmm. And we had to get our truck in for repairs. I remember that it was, at the time the photo was taken, our truck wasn't working, had to get the truck in for repairs quickly because that day we just started getting so busy from people calling us, seeing our free ad in the front page of the newspaper.
You were 22 years old at the time, correct?
Yeah, I think 22, 23.
Okay. So then a few years later, at just 24, the business was booming. You were making like $500,000 in revenue. You had bought your own house. Everything seemed to be going well on the outside, right? But in the book, I read that at this time, you were actually feeling really stressed and depressed because you didn't enjoy going to work anymore. And you felt that it was because of the people that you'd hired and you were working around with, right? So you went ahead and actually fired all 11 employees. What was your thought process behind that decision?
Well, they say one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. I had 9 of the 11 were bad apples. And I just decided I got to make a change here. I'm not having fun. I'm not spending time with my team. I'm hiding in a private office. Today, I don't even have a private office. Yeah. Working from home today. But I really realized building a business was fun. And I wanted to continue to get back to that level of enjoyment. So I didn't know what else to do but bring my entire staff in one morning and had a morning meeting. And I started with two words. I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that as your leader, I've let you down, haven't given you the love and support that you needed to be successful. I might not have found the right people, and I certainly didn't treat you right. And so that day, I had to start from scratch with 5 trucks going down to 1, rebuilding the business over time. And I said, this is a powerful lesson. What am I going to learn from this failure? And the learning was find the right people and treat those people right. I needed to be out front and center with my team and connect with them and give them the support that they needed to grow and develop as employees and people within my organization. And it was life-changing. If I look at my company today, hundreds and hundreds of people, and people are stoked and excited about what we're building. We say we're building something bigger and better together, yeah, bigger than what we'd ever choose to build alone. And whether it's employees in our business, the junction, the head office, supporting entrepreneurs, or whether it's entrepreneurs who have taken their first leap into buying a franchise, starting a business, getting schooling out on the streets with us, both groups of people, we're building something incredibly exceptional together. In fact, our name of our company is Ordinary to Exceptional, O2E Brands. And we take ordinary people like you and me, and we help coach and develop people into exceptional opportunities. It's been a blast, and it continues. I mean, even here we are during a pandemic. Yeah. It's tricky, but there's gifts, there's opportunities, and we're paying attention and having a blast doing what we're doing.
Love it. Going back to hiring the right people, in your book, you talk about how you try to hire someone who has the heart of a founder. What are some of the things you look for in an interview to determine whether or not, you know, they cut it or not, or if they have the heart of a founder or not?
Well, so when we interview, we do something we call the beer and barbecue test. The beer and barbecue test is a simple way to assess whether you think someone's the right fit. We often complicate things in interview processes as HR professionals can do. I mean, we've got lots on our team, but we try and simplify it down rather than all these hypothetical questions of what would you do if you were in a burning building or tell me about a leader and lessons you've learned. We simplify it. We say, would I have a beer with this person? Would I go have a beer if I was interviewing you? Do I find Ennis interesting, interested? Do you have, you and I have a shared passion in life? I mean, the first thing we talked about was Monopoly behind you, right? You know, I love Monopoly, playing a game of building, building homes and real estate and business. I mean, it was a fun thing to do as a kid. What's our shared common passion? Would we have a beer together? We look then on the barbecue side is how would someone fit at a company picnic or a company barbecue? We've got lots of diversity of opinions. We've got introverts and extroverts, but do they fit at our company parties? And do we feel like a team pursuing a common mission? So for us, again, taking ordinary things and making them exceptional, that's the vision. We look for people where we hire on attitude and then we train on skill. We want people that are just fired up to live the dream with us. And that's how we find great people. So when you say heart of a founder, we want someone that cares so deeply in their heart that they believe in the business and they're running it and treating it like it's their own.
Love it. So for those listening who are maybe entrepreneurial minded, right? They have the heart of a founder. They're working at a great company. Would you recommend they start their own business? Or do you feel like, because there's like two routes that I can see like entrepreneurial minded people go, right? Starting your own business as an entrepreneur or working your way up and working as an intrapreneur. What do you feel like one should do? And I guess, like, should they help a company take the company to the next level by becoming an entrepreneur, or should they start their own business?
Well, it's a good question, Ennis. I think it depends on the person's personality. So in the same way that school is great for some people and not great for others, we figure out what our path is. I think entrepreneurship, you can start a business from scratch. You can be an entrepreneur and learn from an entrepreneur. You can go out and buy an existing business and sort of apprentice and grow within that company, or you can start a franchise. I think what people often do is they'll say to me, Brian, how do I come up with a business idea? And I say, don't worry so much about the business idea, because what your business idea starts as will transform over time, and you will tweak it based on customer feedback and demand. Instagram didn't start where it is today. It evolved as a model. So did Airbnb. You know, you can pick any sort of business. Mine, it changed significantly in terms of what the model is. But I often say, don't worry about the model. Don't worry about the business idea. Maybe the business idea for some is actually the big idea is franchising. Mm-hmm. What if you get out and start a franchise and learn from all the best practices and systems that are in place? So someone with Wow One Day Painting is an example. If they come into our organization and they start a Wow One Day Painting franchise where we paint people's homes within a day, we're transforming their space literally overnight. People come in, they know nothing about painting. We don't expect that these are people that are going to love getting on ladders and picking up paintbrushes. We want them to be the CEO of their own business. But they're taking the business operating system, the franchise model, and they're following our proven recipe that wasn't just created by us. It's a combination of every franchise partner that's been a part of our system that's tweaked and found better ways to do everything that we do. So think McDonald's. I mean, McDonald's just came down to a science where if you followed the system, you made millions of dollars and you succeeded. We do the same thing in franchising. And people spend a lot of time stressing about finding the right idea. Sometimes the business model is actually the big idea.
Another topic that I wanted to talk to you about is the topic of partners versus mentors, right? In your book, you talk about how entrepreneurs tend to make the mistake of looking for partners when actually, or when they're feeling lost, when actually they should be looking for a mentor. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, now partnerships are amazing. You know, I love my wife dearly, right? You look at partnerships like that, you know, you want to raise a family together. You know, I didn't want to just go find a mentor when it comes to, you know, how to parent and build a family. But if you think of business, partnerships can be expensive. People will often say, oh, I need someone to do this with. I don't have the confidence. I'm scared. And I've had a couple of partners at different times in the early days. But I realized you don't necessarily need a partner. You can find a friend or a mentor, someone who's much cheaper than a partner in that you're not giving them equity, but you can say, I really want to learn from you as a mentor. And so what I did in the early days is I started what I call my own MBA, because I couldn't get an MBA in school or chose not to. I created my own MBA, which is Mentor Board of Advisors. And that was me just reaching out to people and connecting with entrepreneurs and leaders and learning from them. Fred DeLuca, the founder of Subway, was one of my early days. He's, you know, sadly passed on, but he was one of my early day mentors. And here's a guy that I think at the time was a $9 billion company, and made time in his car in between appointments for little old Brian here starting a business. But I asked for help, and he gave me all this incredible feedback on how to franchise and grow my business. Imagine being able to reach out to the smartest people on the planet who are just emails, Zoom calls, phone calls away, and ask them questions. How much more powerful that can be than bringing on a partner. A partner is one person with a limited sort of set of expertise. You know, I look at myself, I've got some things I'm really good at, but a lot of stuff that I'm awful at. Mm-hmm. Someone can ask me a question about franchising and I'd have good feedback to give. But if they ask me about taking companies public or about some leadership stuff that I just don't understand, a partner doesn't give you as much as someone, a whole bunch of different mentors could, in my mind.
So what I'm hearing is, always do it solo and then just have mentors?
I mean, for me. So I have people that over the years we've given some equity to and we've brought in as a small equity partner in the business so that we can share the wealth of what we're building together, the pride of ownership. Mm-hmm. But for me, people often start a business and you hear a lot in the startup tech world of, you know, my co-founder. So you have a lot of co-founders, people that have come together when really partnerships can struggle. There's a point in time when it just, you go, oh, I'm working way harder than that person. I'm way better at this. They can become challenging. I think it makes more sense to bring partners in later in the game when you need that expertise and you really need someone as a full-time mentor in the business. Mm. But in the early days, I think it can often be the wrong decision. People will falsely, I think, bring on a partner when what they really need is that wise old person in the woods, that mentor who's been there and done what they've done or what they're about to do.
Totally. And what should someone look for in a mentor, and how can, what would you recommend and how you can go about finding one?
Yeah, I think similar to the beer and barbecue test, you could apply that is, does somebody culturally fit you and your energy, your ambition? Do they believe in you when maybe nobody else does? The story again of my grade three teacher, Mr. Dodds, you know, he liked me. And, you know, there weren't a lot of people that liked me as a little kid in school, right? I was so disruptive when being disruptive wasn't necessarily a cool word. I think in finding a mentor, you've got to find someone that you think is the best in the world at helping you. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a sales problem, if you've got a leadership problem, if you've got a business model problem, try and figure out who is the person that I need to go to and ask for their expertise. People will often reach out to me about franchising, and great, I'll help. But when they reach out to me about things that I don't understand, I'll try and introduce them to the right person or give them a suggestion of who they should talk to. But it is really finding the person who has the answers. Why not take, I talk about this in my book, why make the same mistakes that someone else has already made if you can learn from those mistakes and take shortcuts?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that the best way to build meaningful relationships that can, you know, down the line turn into, you know, a mentor-mentee situation is by providing value and being of service, right? What are your thoughts on that? And what are some of the ways that someone who's just starting out like me can provide value to someone like yourself?
I don't know if there always has to be a value exchange. Sometimes it's just knowing your help. And, you know, you told me you're what, 24?
24, yeah.
You know, I was 24 once. I remember what that was like. And people I would reach out to and ask for help, or, you know, you saying, hey, would you be on my podcast? You had a great pitch to me and great energy. And I'm like, yeah, of course I'll do it. So I don't think there has to be a value exchange always. Sometimes it's just make a connection where you can tell that it's a genuine connection of two people. Reach out and ask for help and just be yourself. I don't think you need to promise anything in return. I think when people reach out to me, I'm not expecting anything in return. And, you know, occasionally someone will send you a nice bottle of wine or something as a thank you. I never expect nor want anything. I just want to know that my conversation with someone has made a difference.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, please take a minute and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to see your feedback there. Also, for more inspiration, be sure to go follow Brian at Brian Scudamore. And until the next time, dream big, because you, my friend, are made for more.